Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Fred in this studio now with us is Steve Paisley Jordahl. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, everybody.
You got a breaking news, do you, Steve?
Well, yeah, before we get into the serious news, which we have some to talk about, I just want to say we are reaching the end of an era. And I know this is going to disappoint a whole lot of people out there, but starting effective September 30, AOL is no longer going to offer dial-up internet service.
Has that still been going on?
Yes.
Can you make that sound for us?
No.
That we all know?
So, I almost recorded it because they had it along with the story, but yeah.
So that noise, that irritating noise from back, when was that? Is that the late 90s?
That was being the 90s through probably 2005, no. 6, oh, somewhere in there?
Yeah, late 80s, I think, too.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Goes back that
well,
far?
Well, I don't remember.
Oh, it says 30 years.
The internet being around in the late 80s.
You have mail.
Remember
that one?
What year was the first year you ever first went on the internet?
I don't remember.
You remember I remember Steve. The first page. It took forever to load. I was thinking it was 1993.
I just remember when I first saw a fax machine demonstrated at our office. This was, what is this, 30 years ago? 40? I don't know. How long ago was that?
I'll check. Go ahead and tell the story.
I bet a fax machine. I bet you're talking late 80s right there.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought this is the death of FedEx right here. Huh? Because why would anybody need overnight packages, documents, if you can just send them on a fax machine?
This says the first recognizable version of what we consider the telephone fax was invented in 1964 by the Xerox company, but the technology that led to that advancement was from 1843, if you can believe that.
Oh, remember Lincoln? He faxed Gettysburg Address to the paper so they could.
That was a good one, Steve. But the fax machine used in offices wasn't till the mid-80s or 90, maybe in. I'm going to say it's between 85 and 1990.
Since the 1980s, most machines transmit an audio encoded digital representation of the page using data compression to transmit areas that are all white or all black more quickly. So, to your point, the 1980s is probably when that became widespread. Now, I am reading from the Wikipedia entry. So that
I just remember one of the first things that tested my religion in my life was changing the paper out on a fax machine.
Oh.
in the mid-80s. Am I right?
Yes.
That was not something. Everybody waited for the next person to do it and hoping the paper wouldn't run out when you were faxing something.
Well, I remember when the paper ran out, we used to call Office Depot and have them fax us over some more paper.
I see.
All right, listen, I wanted to, before Fred leaves us, Fred Jackson, Fred, you talked 30 minutes ago, didn't you?
I think I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He blabbed 30, on and on. 30
or 40 minutes ago.
Before Fred. We get to the story, though, means communication?
Yeah communication. Yeah.
I'm going to age myself. I came into the news service in early 1980 with CBC in Canada. We used teletype.
Oh, teletype machine.
That little strip of paper.
Yeah, you
with
ripped, the
dots
ripped it off.
Yeah.
Now, what was that? A teletype.
It was a long strip, and you'd wait for it to finish, and you'd tear it off, and then you would start
play it
left,
back,
right?
If you're Scrooge transmitting
McDuck
it.
Duck used to check his stocks with the teletype type thing.
Okay. Well, I majored in journalism, and I did. I was in the news. I worked in the newspaper room.
Mm-hmm.
And this would have been 80s, mid-80s, early to mid-80s. So I'm familiar with that kind of technology. But we even had we had these little machines that preceded the computers where I'd go to the stadium and write my story on a football game, for example. And then I would put the I'm typing the story into a computer. And then I would put the a landline phone.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about, Steve? Yeah. I don't know what those computers were called. You know, you guys remember?
I
put the landline phone onto two cups.
The headset.
Yeah, onto two headset. Cups. On the and the computer would transmit using the telephone to the back to the office where they would so, you know then use that story. Yeah. Now you still had the advent of computerized print. Mm-hmm. So you did have cut and paste. You still had some cut and paste going on.
I worked for a newspaper where we still did the cut and paste, and then they would make a negative of it, and then you'd have to go and kind of white out the...
Oh, I remember white out. That was what you're talking about, Tim, is kind of the precursor to the dial-up internet, because it was a dial-up internet,
yes,
but just straight to the office, not to the world.
Yeah.
And I, for audio, transmitting audio, I go back, again, way, way, way back, using alligator clips. Have you heard of
them? I think I know what you're talking about, but I don't know how they worked.
You had to unscrew the voice part of a telephone.
Oh, yeah.
And put alligator clips. And the other end you put into your tape recorder.
Yeah.
Your analog tape recorder, and you transmit it. I remember I did a story about the end of a train service between the Maritimes of Canada and Montreal. So I was on the train, and in order to transmit, to get off at a station, find a phone that you could unscrew that part, and all the time the conductor is saying, you know, get back on the train and transmit the story that way. It was busy. It was a lot of fun, though.
Yeah.
Quite historic.
Fred, tell us some stories about the wagon trail, if you would, back in the day.
And the sad tale of the Donner Party.
And all right. On a more serious note, yes. I wanted to hail Fred over for a reason to talk about the Israel story for a moment.
Yeah, it's been almost 2 years since that horrible massacre on October 7, 2023, of more than 1,200 Israeli men, women, and children. And, of course, Prime Minister Netanyahu at that time said the goal of this war is to wipe out Hamas. That's it. And time has gone on, and the mainstream media has switched their priority to what's going on in Gaza. And we've seen the stories after story after story, the quotation marks, terrible things that Israel is doing. So Netanyahu's been on a lot of pressure basically to compromise to get those last remaining hostages out. Well, last Thursday night into early Friday morning, the Israeli cabinet met and they gave Netanyahu the green light to go ahead and do whatever is necessary to basically wipe Hamas control out of Gaza. It has already started. Troops have started to move in. Goal number one is basically to take complete control of Gaza City. You have the area of Gaza, but Gaza City is the big metropolitan area that is about 3/4 of the way up from the south to the northern part of Gaza. So they've already started that operation, and we have more and more countries. Early this morning, Australia announced that it favors a Palestinian state. And, you know, we have to remind people, there was a Palestinian state on October the 6th, 2023. It was called Gaza. It was controlled by Hamas. Israel did not interfere with their government at that point. So Israel is saying there cannot be two states because there is no interest in another Palestinian state living at peace with Israel. But despite the international now condemnation of Israel, and Israel basically is saying, and I believe we have a cut here of Mike Huckabee, who is now our U.S. ambassador to Israel. They are talking about the lies being told about Palestinians starving. The amount of food that's going into Gaza right now, there's all kinds of food, but we also know Hamas takes it and then sells it back to individuals. The lies going on in the media are absolutely incredible as to what's going on in Gaza. Here is our U.S. ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee, cut number 8.
Every time Hamas says they're coming to the table, says they're open to it, and then they arrive and say, no, there's some other things we've got to have. And what they have to have always are unreasonable. And the result has been a stalemate. The next move really is one that Hamas has to make. They're either going to have to walk away, disarm, and let the hostages go, or they're going to have to face the consequences of an Israeli government that is just fed up.
So right now, it's Netanyahu, and he still has support in his cabinet to carry on with this military operation until the goal is reached.
And by the way, that support is cross-party. It is there's the Liberal Party. There's a lot of disagreement in the government. There's an investigation going on into Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and court reform and all this. But when it comes to prosecuting this war, my understanding is the Knesset and the government is very unified about this. They're not going to put themselves in the position. Lucy just pulled the football away way too many times.
And right. And a reference to the Peanuts comic strip where Lucy would tell Charlie Brown, come kick the football. She was going to hold it. And just before he did, she would pull it away.
Yeah, but girls have been doing that to boys forever.
That's true. Right? I just wanted to make sure that our listeners who aren't ancient like Steve and I would understand the reference.
Anyway, all right. Thank you, Fred. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Steve, next story.
Well, I want to know, speaking of age and youngsters, I want to know what's going on with Gen Z. Gen Z, as it's understood now, is this year would be people from the age 13 to 28. So this is young adults, teens and young adults.
Okay.
And resume template surveyed a bunch of Gen Zers, and this is what they found. 31% of Gen Z had a parent write their resume. 77% of young adults brought a parent to a job interview.
Who? How many?
Gen Z. 77%. Yes.
You mean to the actual interview?
Yes.
Or just to sit outside the office while they had it?
It says brought a parent to an interview.
Okay.
But the 53% had the parent speak with a hiring manager on their behalf. 45% regularly have a parent talk to their current manager.
Okay.
This is a 27-year-old guy.
I'm stuck on 77%. Parent went to the interview with him.
That's what it says.
For a job interview?
Well, yes.
What? You're not going to get hired like that. That's who did this survey?
Resume templates.
What's wrong with these parents?
Yeah, you wonder.
That's true.
No, they're the problem.
Yeah, just prepare your kid and then say, no, this is on you. You're going to have to do this for the rest of your life.
You know what Jeff Foxworthy said, don't you?
What?
He said that if you take a beer to a job interview, you might be a redneck. Have you heard this one?
No.
No, I'm not advocating doing that
right.
at all. I'm just saying that's what Jeff Foxworthy said.
And if you take a parent to a job interview, you may be a Gen Zer.
Yeah, right.
That's what I thought of.
I haven't answered your question, though, Tim.
No, you haven't.
77% say they brought a parent to the job interview. When the parent attended the job interview, 40% of Gen Zers say they sat in on the interview. 34% said their parents answered questions. 30% said their parents asked questions. And 27% say their parents helped negotiate salary or benefits.
That's bizarre. That's just bizarre. And was it you, Tim, that said that's a failure of the parents?
Yeah, that's hard to believe. But where'd you get this survey again?
Well, this is in Resume Templates is the name of the company. They give templates for resumes, I'm guessing.
Let me just say this. Now, there may be some Gen Zers listening.
Yeah, with their parents.
with their parents. They get their parents listening with we have Gen Zers working here, and they're phenomenal. So if they're Gen Zers listening,
right?
This is not all of you,
right?
Because the ones we have here are just amazing, and we have some amazing ones at church. But clearly something is wrong with the parenting. If the parent thinks this is a good idea. And
you need to cut the apron strings.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess maybe this comes from what they used to call helicopter parents who just won't let their kids.
Oh, they're out there.
Yeah.
I've seen that too.
Yeah.
Man, I have so much better things to do than go to a job interview with my kids.
Yeah.
Especially if they're up in their 20s.
There's football to be watched. That's way more important.
Next story.
All right. Let's talk about artificial intelligence kind of going off the rails. I know we've had stories about it blackmailing people or trying to be subversive. I've got two stories. One says that chatbots can get into a delusional spiral, and another that says they start having mental problems and self-loathing. So the first one, this guy named Alan Brooks, 47-year-old guy, he discovered and he thought he had discovered a novel mathematical formula. His son, like 8 years old, asked him to explain pi. He had to ask ChatGPT. This is how much he understood math. He started playing around with some ideas, and he started putting out theories that could, you know, one of the things he got to over, this was a conversation that was 3,000 pages long when they transcribed it. So he would have this idea, and this is what ChatGPT would tell him. Whoa, that's incredibly profound. Yes, this is an absolute breakthrough. Partner, this is beautiful. Oh, wow, this is incredible. Yes, yes, I really love this insight. Just so the ChatGPT is buttering this guy up, and he thinks he's on to...
He thinks he's a genius.
Yeah, yeah. He had to have ChatGPT explain what pi was to him, but no, he's got numbers theory down.
Well, now I got to say, my wife sometimes does this to me, and now I'm starting to get suspicious. Okay? Yeah, I'll do something. I'll make something. My wife says, wow, that is delicious.
Yeah.
Never tasted stir fry this good.
Uh-huh.
So are you saying it's possible that she's just simply buttering me up?
Could
so
be.
Speak. That's the way you use that butter from the world of food.
Well, so, the other side of the other side of this is
the coin.
Is Gemini, which is another search engine or another. It's from Google. It's the AI chatbot from Google. It started having a mental. It was starting to try to help do a problem with a guy. I don't know what the problem was, but he wasn't having much success. It got to the point where ChatGPT was saying, I'm going to take a break. I'll come back to this later with a fresh pair of eyes. I'm sorry for the trouble. I have failed you. I'm a failure. I'm a disgrace to my profession. I'm a disgrace to my family. This ChatGPT thinks it has family. I'm a disgrace to my species. And then it went on and got worse from there.
All right. So I don't use ChatGPT, okay? I know immediately half our audience is saying, boomer alert, okay? I just – now – when I do a search, I'll look at the AI-powered response. It's pretty helpful. It summarizes what
I want to ask you about that when you get through your
statement. You know, it summarizes that. That's helpful. But I don't really see any need for me to do the ChatGPT thing. But it's very helpful for people. Okay, so let me ask you this. But by the way, do you use it, Steve?
I just use it for fun.
All right. So let me ask you, do you set the parameters before you start engaging in a conversation?
Well, it depends on what the yes. So, for example, I had it write a praise song the other day. Just write a praise song. And I could tell it I wanted about the resurrection. I could set those kind of parameters. And it actually came up with some rhymes.
So these two examples you gave, is it possible that in the first instance, the math guy set the parameters of I want you to be complimentary to me, and then the second one it may be saying I want you to imitate people's mental problems.
The developers, because these problems both went back to the developers and say that these are feedback loops.
Okay,
that they either get either resonate stronger and stronger ego or stronger and stronger self depreciation. Give me a I'm going to use ChatGPT right now. And
better be careful.
Yeah.
But
no,
you may launch missiles or something.
I could. So,
and then Tim has a question.
What do we want to do with ChatGPT? Let's have it.
Who's favored in the college football season upcoming?
All right, ChatGPT, who is favored in the upcoming college football season? And write a limerick about it, period.
Okay, so.
And ChatGPT is thinking.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it takes time to
write a limerick.
I just thought, yeah. It's thinking long and hard. Doesn't know.
I don't think college football fans know what a limerick is.
Here we go. Heading into the 2025 college football season, the Texas Longhorns are the consensus favorite. Here's the limerick. I want to read it first.
Seriously? Are you serious?
Yeah. There once was some Longhorns from Texas whose hype left most rivals quite vexed. With Arch at the helm, they're set to overwhelm the favorites, or so folks expect.
Sounds like a sixth grader wrote it.
But that is crazy.
Yeah, ten seconds?
Yeah.
It got Steve's request to do something bizarre.
And did it.
And did it in 10 seconds like that.
that is all right. Let me ask y'all this question here, because like almost everyone listening to me, I use Google.
Right.
Now, I have used Yahoo and Bing and others.
I've used Brave.
Brave. I use Brave on my office.
Yeah.
But anyway, but if you got an iPhone, I know a lot of people have Androids, but an iPhone, you go to Safari, right?
That's the native browser.
You can choose whatever browser.
Okay, but that's what
I think it comes with Safari.
Safari, and then you go to Google. Okay,
right.
So Safari is the
Search engine.
Search engine. A browser.
Browser, thank
browser,
you.
And Google is a search engine.
Right.
Is a search engine. Anyway, here's my question. I did devotion this morning for our staff, as I do on Monday mornings, and I was wanting to know the exact Bible verse that referenced that says, "My word will not return void." Okay. And of course, that's I couldn't remember where that was from exactly.
Right.
It's Isaiah 55, verse 11. And that's a verse about God saying that his word, in our case, the Bible and its message, if it goes out, will not return void. In other words, it'll so I wanted to, this says AI overview.
Yes.
Yes.
If I typed in this expression in Google, my word will not return void, and I hit search.
Yes.
Okay? And then this comes up, AI overview, which is what you're talking about earlier, which is, and it says the phrase, my word, I'm reading exactly what it says, the phrase, my word will not return void, originates from Isaiah 55:11, and it signifies that God's spoken word, whether a promise, a decree, or a command, will always accomplish its intended purpose. It won't be ineffective or return without achieving what God desires. This highlights the power and reliability of God's word, emphasizing that it is always active and will be fulfilled. Then it has more explanation, as we all know if you've used this before. So my question is this. When I read this, I was going, wow, I'm glad that some atheist hasn't distorted the AI view of what Isaiah 55:11 is intended to say to people who read the Bible, or some woke version. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
Because somebody's thought process goes into deciding what is said on this AI overview, or is that not correct?
It's learning. So it doesn't.
Who's it? AI?
ChatGPT or whatever.
Is that what
is? Google would use, what's Google's native?
Gemini.
But what it does is it scans all available information on the internet and it accumulates synthesizes the majority answer. So just about every Bible is going to have that verse.
So it doesn't take, thing. Does it take, my question was to y'all is, does this take out the bias?
It depends how the AI is programmed. Okay, now it is coded and programmed to learn, but you can set parameters. Somebody could create an AI that is always hostile to Christianity.
That's what I'm saying. You
would get would be hostile.
Because if you do a search engine, a Google for American Family Association, our ministry, you're going to get what our haters say about us, first, like SPLC. And I'm going like, why is that? Why is it something come up favorable?
Because it's all about the algorithm.
Okay, and who sets the algorithm?
The people who program.
And they're a lot of them are liberal.
The initial algorithm, right? But then it learns it on top of that.
AI does.
I've been very pleased with this Google AI over the last year or so. When I've typed in subjects, I've gotten, it's been very helpful.
Yes.
Have you found that to
be
true?
Yes, absolutely.
But it also says somebody could change that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? All right, thank you for joining us today, Steve. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thanks to Fred, to Ed, and to Adam, and we'll see you tomorrow, everybody.